You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Bonnie Maranka. She is a New York-based critic. She's a publisher and editor of PAJ, which is a journal of performance and art. And she's edited and written over 16 books. And we're very happy to have her here today. Bonnie, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thank you for inviting me.
So I want to get into some of your writings, and I want to talk about PAJ, but perhaps we can start off with, if this isn't too broad, the role of the critic. You've written so much criticism, and you've been involved so much with theater art. I've heard different things from different critics on what they believe a critic's role is. What do you feel about the role of a critic, and essentially your role in writing so many of the books you've written about that contain criticism?
Well, I've been writing criticism a long time. I actually started as an undergraduate when I inaugurated the drama and arts page at the college I went to, Montclair State College in New Jersey. Then I came into New York and I started also writing freelance for a lot of different publications. At first I wrote about music when I got to New York, more of that, and as well as some theater. I was a critic for the Soho Weekly News while I was doing doctoral studies and in the early and mid-70s and wrote quite a lot about theater. I'd always been attracted to the non-mainstream and experimental works, though I, you know, interviewed and wrote about popular singers, serious popular singers and music when I was doing more music criticism. I'd always been attracted to the essay and to this form in terms of thinking about the arts. I've never performed or been involved in productions or anything. I also studied with Harold Corman in college, who was one of the founders of the group theater and the great critic and theater person who wrote reviews for The Nation, wrote extensively about theater. I love the idea of the essay and the whole thinking process that's involved in criticism. I'm not interested in criticism as a kind of consumer report, though I admit that earlier on, I did do more reviews because I was working for a newspaper and didn't always have the chance to do an essay. And so there, you're a little bit more involved in thinking about what works or whether something is successful or the different qualities of the production. For many years now already, I've been much more involved in reflecting on the state of performance and also much more involved in thinking about performance history. So in the beginning, I think that my function as a critic, when I did my first book, The Theater of Images, I was more concerned with helping to define the terms and vocabulary and interests and forms of the new contemporary theater, which I had called The Theater of Images. People like Robert Wilson and Richard Foreman and Lee Brewer. And as the decades unfolded, I felt my function was more in the realm of trying to be part of the construction of performance history, because by now I've seen more than 40 years of many of the major pieces. And I also, began to develop different themes in the writing, more of what we might call think pieces. So it's very rare that I actually write about a single production. I like to write on much more broad themes. So the critic has many functions. In some cases, it might be just a reviewer where you see a production and you write about it within a couple of days or weeks. That's for perhaps a newspaper or maybe a magazine deadline. And with a journal, you it's a much more reflective kind of writing about the arts. So you have weeks or months to think about your topic. So, you know, it really depends on who your audience is and where you're writing for and where you are at this at your particular stage in life. There's nothing wrong in my mind about really good criticism that is, you know, brief and perhaps, you know, in a newspaper and is more of a kind of evaluative thing. But I expect from critics who are writing a long time a certain level of seriousness, you know, involved with the ethics of performance, involved with a longer historical view, a knowledge of the artist's body of work, just a much larger framework in a kind of high intellectual caliber. That's my ideal of in terms of, you know, writing criticism and what I like to publish or read.
And maybe let's investigate, you know, what that means exactly. When you talk about a think piece and the essay, we're talking about long form essays as opposed to short form, I imagine. And just like as in the journal, these aren't, you're not talking about theory and art speak, so to speak. Is that correct?
Yes. When I talk about criticism, I make a distinction between writing criticism, or let's say arts writing, and art theory. I'm you know, well aware of the contemporary theories, but PAJ is not a theory-based journal, which is to say that we don't deal with so much applied theory in terms of dealing about artworks. I believe in the primacy of the artwork first, and then the critic bringing his or her own intelligence to that. So I do draw a distinction between, say, writing and criticism or theory to make that a little bit clearer. I know I maybe have used criticism a little bit loosely, but I think of being an arts writer now. And there is a difference between being a theorist and a writer or a critic.
And in your role in looking over all this, I mean, in one sense, the way I'm understanding part of the way you're talking about critics that have been around, taking the long view and looking at history, is it also about a kind of system of checks and balances? I often hear from different people that I interview that there is no system of so-called checks and balances in the art world, meaning how do we know when an artist, a performer, has achieved their goal or felt slightly short of their goal? Some of this may be discussed in MFA or now doctoral programs, but in the art world, critics, as I'm reading part of what you're saying, also have that role. Is that the case, and is that what you mean by the kind of mature critic taking the long view in a historical context?
Yes, but I think, you know, I think one of the things it would be important to do is really to distinguish between the theater world and the art world. For example, I can't speak to art criticism. There's a long and very fine you know, legacy of art history that still continues. That's a form of scholarship. If we're talking about everyday performances and you know, the move into things into areas that have more of a kind of immediacy and that are written about, you know, in blogs and newspapers, I would say that one of the problems I've always thought that the art world had in terms of its writing about performance is that it was very, and it continues to be, except in academia, or maybe not even so there anymore, but it's very lacking in any kind of evaluation or apparent standards to a certain extent. I think that performance writing within the art world, within the visual arts world, has not advanced as much as writing in theater. And much of the visual arts writing since the 70s, as I have read it, has been documentation or description, or really very focused on the artist's intention, whereas theater has developed a highly sophisticated form of writing and criticism and now theory over these last decades. And oftentimes when you read interviews in the art world or you read commentary, there's a lack of sophistication and a lack of knowledge about writing about performance from the theater world. And one of the things that has been my project personally, and which I've also brought to PAJ since at least into the 90s, though I started this much further back for myself in the 70s, was to really bring together the two histories of performance. Because there's one history of performance in the art world, and there's another history of performance in the theater world. And they sometimes, intersect. And I think increasingly art world people have brought in, theatrical figures. But it's very basic, and I think that this has held back the art world's understanding of performance.
I'd like to explore that more, because that's very interesting, the difference between the two worlds. And I remember when I first read, Rosalie Goldberg's book on performance, and as an artist that's also done some performance, I thought this is very interesting, but it also made me think about how a curator or someone can look over the history of different visual artists doing certain actions and then string them all together as a history, which perhaps they are, but also it's looked at in a very different way. There was perhaps things that are slightly outside the bounds of what quote unquote performance art means, and I think those two worlds are difficult. I remember when I went to there was a show of a friend of mine, Claude Wampler, at the Kitchen, and I was saying how much I enjoyed the show, and she said, well, it's nice for you to be here. She said, I never see any of my friends from the visual art world here. I see, and she's also a visual artist. She said they seem to be very separate camps. There's one group that comes to my opening and another group that comes to performances. Mm-hmm. Is that partly what you're talking about, this kind of these different camps, so to speak? And, PS122 and in other spaces, I guess, are trying to bridge that, but even there at PS122, it still seems to be dance and theater oriented. But how do we manage these different categories?
Well, I was really thinking of them in terms of how different a huge segment of the audiences are in terms of the kind of performance and the particular figures that are written about. So in other words, if we take the example of people in who come from an art background, who do they write about in terms of theater? If we talk about people in the theater, who are their journals? Who are the journals publishing about by theater critics in those journals? A lot of it has to do, if I take the theater journal, people from the art world are written about, but it's people like, say, Abramovich or previously, say, Rachel Rosenthal, a lot of feminist performance, Karen Finley, or things that come out of the queer performance, Tim Miller. I'm just picking some of those names now.
Tina Segal would be something that they would write
maybe
about.
Maybe Tina
as well.
Segal, but it doesn't appear too much in theater journals. Jack Smith was discovered, a bit later by people in the theater world. But those are just a few of the things. I would say that Abramovich, maybe Linda Montano, but largely, performances around art and life or feminist performance, certainly Carolee Schneemann. Even Joan Jonas has not been written about very much in theater journals or say Alison Knowles or some of the people who've been around for decades who are very connected with with visual arts. Now, if you turn toward the art magazines, who do they write about in theater? Occasionally, Robert Wilson shows up. But can you name 5 or 10 theater artists who were written about? I really can't.
Yeah, I can't either. Right, that's not something you see.
Sometimes, you know, I've always been struck by the fact that when I've gone to Europe, when there have been exhibits about all the intermedia over the generations, video, you know, performance, installation, these kinds of things in theater, you find much more of the curator's input in terms of including theater, so that you might have Thaddeus Cantor appear in an exhibit, or Artaud, or someone. You see what I'm saying? Doesn't seem so exclusive as it is here. Performance history seems to have a wider net when I see the curation in Europe, whereas here it seems to be much more, you know, divided fields. After all, the art, visual arts are funded by very many different sources, and their venues and the critics are different. And then when you have performance in the theater world, it's also in different venues and different critics, different funding sources, different publications. I deal with this as a professor as well, sometimes in the confusion of students who don't know the difference between performance, say performance art and theater. And, you know, it's been a big discussion since the 70s. We published a magazine which actually just became available digitally online this month. In the late 70s, we published 7 issues of a kind of a zine style oblong size magazine called Live, and everybody was covered in there. You know, dance and clubs and festivals and performance. And right away in the early issues, we had discussions among theater people and art people in terms of acting and non-acting, because many of these things about what is performance art and what is theater started to appear in the 70s discussions. And it's very interesting from a historical point of view to see how long that topic has been with us.
Yeah, you've seen so much change in the time since PAJ began and now, and I mean, it seems to me one of the things that that is unlike the art world, and correct me if I'm wrong, but between the 70s and now, the art world has had this relationship to the market that's colored the way it's written about and who's important and who's not important, and mm-hmm. unless I'm mistaken, it seems that performance art and theater really is that hasn't happened. As you're saying, there aren't those kind of funding sources. It's not being purchased. I mean, with the exception maybe of Tino Segal and Abramovich and a few others, that kind of careerism or success or even talk about the market is largely absent. Is that the case?
Well, since there's no real object, what can people do? They can go to festivals in Europe. They can go to you know, different venues, of which there are very few in terms of performance spaces around the country that cater to this kind of work outside the museum. Now, you know, the museums came actually very late into really moving toward performance, as we all know. Plus, there's been the factor that there had also been a strain in the art world that was very anti-theatrical. But now we've witnessed, and it's been commented on with the recent Performa, that performance art seems to be moving toward theater. And, in fact, we've just published a book called New Art Theater that has dialogues with many visual artists who are now working with theatrical process, rehearsal technique, text. So, you know, in a way, I think performance art, to some extent, reached its limitations in terms of criticism and in terms of the form. And it's turning toward theater, toward spectacle, toward audience over the years. to a point now where people are really seeing that and writing about it in some of the commentary. And yet, no theater people, for example, are invited in to perform. But you have visual artists doing works that are becoming more and more theatrical, but often also bad theater. The question is, as performance art moves in some quarters toward theater, what will be the criteria that's used to evaluate it?
That's true. That's a very important and interesting issue, because I remember hearing that from Vallejo Gantner, the artistic director of Performance Space 122, who I know well, very open guy, worked with, you know, is trying to always do kind of art hybrids, as he calls them, or finding, you know, moving a little bit away from the theater that they're known for and have more performance art. And I remember him coming out of a performance saying, you know, there were some interesting things, but truthfully there was, as you're saying, a lot of bad theater there, because that's really his background.
There's something, due to the rise of media, television, the whole, you know, sense of spectacle and culture, it's pushing people toward away from the austerity, say, of some kinds of performance art as it developed in the art world, around, you know, art as a language and medium, and it's become more and more like television, actually. And YouTube, you know, so there's begins to be a lot of confusion between, you know, just everyday entertainment and now what is performance art. But here's another factor that's also intriguing. Performance art is really the only live form that is non-virtuosic. That also makes it, in a way, difficult to develop a criticism about. Every other form dealing with performance or performing arts is based on virtuosity to a certain extent. Or even if you're going to turn against virtuosity, it has to be in a way that you actually have those skills and you move in another direction that might be non-virtuosic as a particular artistic position.
That's true. That's very interesting, and it also becomes that much more challenging, I would imagine, for a critic to discuss, to write an essay on, when true it's not a virtuosic medium in a traditional sense. So that's part of the role that PAJ has played, isn't it, to help with that understanding of what's really going on and what performance artists are thinking and developing.
And also in general to expand the notion and to really think about what we consider performance or how what other ways we can look at performance. And that's why over the last year we had a recent issue on performance and drawing. Now that's a field that is really no substantial scholarship or books or writing in. What is the relationship of performance to drawing? There are 17 portfolios across fields: dance, video, theater, performance. There are so many artists who do preliminary drawings before a performance or drawing during a performance. Or different kinds of notation and scores and so on. But there's really substantially little, if nothing, on performance and drawing as a field of study. Another recent issue we did was on performance and architecture, expanding that to people who work in design and architecture firms. It could be, you know, performance pieces dealing with immersive environments or robotics or ecological issues or the city. I feel there, you know, that the function of PAJ is to do what other journals aren't doing. And since we're not really interested in following the, you know, all the different changing theoretical positions that happen, many other journals are already covering things in that way. We're much more tied to, you know, to the arts themselves, so that I try to have PAJ follow, you know, what artists are doing now or over the century, rather than what are the, you know, ideas in academia. Now, of course, they crisscross. Many people, most people who are writing also teach. There are very few independent journalists. So there obviously is a crossover, but it depends on the language of the journal. And I think people know that we prefer a more journalistic, a very serious journalistic approach. But that's one way that PAJ has been functioning, by trying to find new directions. And we've also always included a lot of artist writings in PAJ. But the question is, my goal over the last two decades at least has been to try, as I said, to bring together the two histories of performance for a larger history of performance ideas. And that's a kind of ongoing project or a work in progress.
And that's what will continue. That's also the future of PAJ as you see it?
Yes, I think that's what we will continue to do. You know, next year is our 40th year, 2016. And what we might do also is to pull out some pieces from the archive, because it was so very different what you did in the theater journal say we started in 1976, what you did in the 70s and 80s, when actually the field was also just in the beginning stages of being created, and even much about modern theater and modern drama had not been translated or written about. And it was a period before specialization that we have now. So we may pull out some of these archival pieces and put them in the journal. But the journal is also going to move toward expanding the book review section and including more artist books and offbeat books that are not just the ones reviewed in academic presses. And also I wanted to move toward more thematic pieces rather than just covering discrete events. And I'd like PAJ also to have, you know, a historical point of view, but also to be to do the kind of criticism that people did at one time and don't really do now, which is to really look at a field and you know, give it a kind of rigor, even if that means that you're, you know, pulling apart the arguments or you're being more negative. That I think a lot of criticism from both camps, theater and art, has become just too promotional. It's work that is you know, just being very positive about everything and not dealing with the aesthetic values of work, not you know what I'm trying to say, just a
yeah.
very different kind of criticism than in previous decades. It's just taking applied theory and finding works that fit it and then writing about them without, in many cases, people even seeing the work and not having any kind of aesthetic evaluation of it. So I'm not saying that everyone should just be negative or, you know, slamming this or that work, but we just don't have the kind of criticism that really challenges people for their theories or for their artworks, or looks at the field and really, you know, criticizes what's going on in the lack of ambition today, for example, that you see in works.
And the lack of ambition, you mean, which is an interesting point. These kind of very short form works, or what does that mean exactly? The lack of ambition.
Well, I mean the subject matter. You know, I think that we live in a time where people are not really interested in the imagination. They're interested in what they consider reality, or making a statement about the world, or a statement about a social issue. So that's why we have, certainly in theater, a lot of work that's documentary, or a lot of work based on interviews, or too much work that's developed out of media that's just really like television. So what we're missing is often is a poetic, visionary view of the world. And you can still have that with a catastrophic imagination. But it's just that now art takes the forms of documentary or a kind of reality show or something, you know what I mean, or autobiography. And it's often a small, very small sense of ambition. It's often very juvenile.
That's true, and I wonder why that is. What is happening? Because that's actually a kind of a trend. Is that something that's driven by, I don't know, the market or universities? Why is that happening? That is a very interesting notion that of course, exists. What do you think causes that?
Well, it's really hard to pin down one cause. Certainly it derives from where we are in the state of the culture now and the dumbing down of the culture. I mean, I've been reading over the last 2 years so many articles about in national media about what's happening with literary culture versus digital culture. We see what's happened with magazines in terms of changes of editorships and the kind of commentary in magazines, the difficulty that the essay is having, for example. In schools also, I think that the whole question of history is very, has been really challenged in the university, so that there's too much emphasis on contemporary work, and people no longer have the historical tools to know their fields in a really deep dimension. And that is the fault of the universities where that's happening. There's just too much emphasis on the contemporary, on contemporary work. That's happening in art schools, and it's certainly happening in theater schools. And then one has to say it's the people themselves. I don't know whether or how much tastes have changed. You know, they do in different generations and different periods. It certainly seems that people are, that artists are often pandering to audiences. Well, their ideas are just not very ambitious. They're very small. They're often not of a higher or more, challenging level than one might see in a newspaper or on television. Now, whether people think this is something that they need to do in order to get audiences or to sell, or whether the venues themselves, say in theater, are producing this, it's really hard to say. There's so many factors that can be generating things. Yeah. I think it's just the general dumbing down of the culture and the lack of rigor that's coming into the culture, and also what's happened in education.
Yeah, and perhaps a function of capitalism as well. I mean, I interview a lot of artists in Europe, and it seems to be quite different in Europe. Or this is my perspective, and of course I'm selecting artists, different ones, visual artists and performers, but I often hear something from those artists that's very different than what I hear from a lot of American artists. Not that there really is this divide, but that, a lot of criticism of capitalism in Europe, a lot of criticism of the market, and a lot of artists that aren't thinking about how I'm, going to enter into the market, but are just doing work and following kind of way of thinking that is not theory-based, but it has more depth. It's not about objects. It's not about, this one idea or a solitary idea. It's about exploring notions, whether they're political or geographical or personal. Do you think that's at all an effect, or that's maybe just my myopia? I sort of see Europe as a place where, in certain parts as well as, around the world, where there isn't this kind of same dumbing down as perhaps there is in America, partly because of the capitalist structure and this pressure to produce, to make, to excel, to have money. This is very kind of cruel system, really.
Yeah, well, of course, if you take, for example, the theater situation, people who run theaters in Europe are not spending all their time fundraising. It's largely a subsidized world. And also, the universities in Europe historically have not produced all the artists that the U.S. does through our educational system, because you generally don't go to a university to be a playwright, a director, a sculptor, a painter. You go to art schools. And the enrollments are much smaller, and they're much more difficult to get into. So you don't have the proliferation of people competing, or putting one generation against another, one region against another, and everybody competing now for smaller and smaller part of the pot. And also, our real estate market, certainly in New York, which is the center of arts activity, is making it more and more difficult to be an artistic center. There's much more subsidized artistic housing and in many places in Europe. And as far as the art market or the art world, I think that a lot of the curating that you see in Europe also takes a much more historical research. Researched overview, and we often don't see those kinds of exhibits here on any particular topic. I was thinking of something I saw in Barcelona some years ago, within the last decade, on the theater of war, and the kind of magnificent overview in so many different media and fields around war imagery. Or just various exhibits I've seen in Spain, which I think has a very high level of curating, or Berlin, or in Paris, we don't often get those historical overviews. But I think that one thing I've always noticed is that the European artists, and many of their big shows from time to time, deal with the idea of a kind of a utopianism or failed utopianism, and that's something that we don't really have as a kind of center of or framework in this country so much, in terms of rethinking the 20th century and rethinking leftist politics and rethinking the role of the artist in revolution. I don't know if you feel the same way, but just European history and the constant turmoil there, and even as we're seeing now, gives all new tinges to the communist world, to the idea of borders, to the Mediterranean. And I feel that there's a lot going on in Europe that we might not, be so aware of here, that really impacts the kind of art that people do when they're not just so beholden to the art market and to publicity, as we are here.
I think that's true. And in closing, what is it that are you writing another book now? I know you did the Meredith Monk book, which is wonderful, and there'll be links to that in this post. Is there another book that you're working on in the future?
I just finished that book. It came out in November. But what I've just worked on and just finished, because I'm on my way to Europe to give some talks in Italy and in Paris, I've just written about Joan Jonas, who's representing the U.S. at the biennial. I'm very intrigued by her work. I began to see it in the 70s. And it's interesting that, in terms of wrapping up our conversation, that Joan and I have had arguments over the last many years, and because I've always said, the art world is so anti-theater, and she'd say, no, it isn't. And I think I finally come around to really understanding the basis of this disagreement. And I realized more and more in my research that for her generation, they weren't anti-theater, because when they started out, there wasn't really much of a performance art, and their references were theater. So if you go back and look at the writings of Dick Higgins or Alan Caprow or Carolee Schneemann or Cage or Oldenburg, they all used the term theater, and that was their reference point what they knew about theater, drama or popular entertainments or vaudeville or comedy or even certain kinds of television. So then everything changed when once we got the word performance art, whenever that came about, maybe the early 70s or something. So then I began to understand that this, you know, where does this sort of anti-theater, where does this theater performance art thing actually fall? Because Joan's work is very theatrical, but she is one of the contemporary performance artists who uses theatrical means and always has. And then I love the idea of drawing in her work. So that's really my latest work. And I think I may pursue, you know, performance and drawing because I'm always attracted to new fields. But on the other hand, I may go back and also write about text. I think there's a lot of work to be done in terms of how much of the idea of text and performance has also been ignored in the art world. And this is a way to bring, you know, many different fields together. I really miss writing. I miss writing in the theater as the theater has moved away from dramatic literature. And I miss the loss of the text. So I think I'll personally be moving between these two areas, between visual arts topics and, you know, in theater and what's more traditionally theater topics.
Well, that sounds very interesting. I look forward to your writings and more issues of PAJ. And I want to thank you so much, Bonnie, for talking with us today.
Well, thank you very much. I really enjoyed it.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIVC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.